Come join the conversation, the show that you've been wanting. Keep it real with no filter. Weekly we share discussions, WWSD. Interviewing creative guests, talking the creative process and sharing all the influences from TV and film. Emmy nominated and winning, yeah, they're coming through. Actors and comedians too, directors and writers, way more than a few. Masters of their craft, yes, tune in, you gotta see. This the podcast that you need, WWSD.
Welcome to the WWSD podcast. Weekly, we share discussions with interesting and creative people. We are sponsored by Collector's Maze. You can check them out at collectorsmaze.com for all things related to fandom. I'm your host, Josh, and as always, I'm joined by my buddy and co-host, Seamus. How's it going, Seamus?
It's going great, man. I'm excited for tonight.
Oh, man, we got a really cool guest tonight, Seamus. I'm excited to share him with everyone. We are joined by comedian Stephen Bowles. Stephen, it's a pleasure having you on the podcast. How's it going, man?
Going really great. Thank you guys for having me. And I got to say also that I love the intro music that you guys have.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, shout out to Burton M6 for that. That was his joint.
Okay. Well, I was about to say that was the funniest thing about this podcast to me is that someone's going to watch this on YouTube and then see the intro, and then it's just three white dudes that look like they stormed the Capitol. You know? It totally caught me off guard, but I'm like, yo, this shit is bars at the top of the podcast. I love this already.
Cultural appropriation is our birthright, right?
Nah, it's a great track. Shout out to your buddy, yo. That's a great track.
Yeah, it's pretty new and all. We've been wanting to do something for a while, and we just found like a guy that was awesome. And like Seamus hit him up, and it just worked perfectly. It was like this first draft as well. Like, it was no edits to it. Like, we sent him like, hey, can you do something like this? And like 24 hours later, he sent it back to us, and it was just like, oh, it's perfect. It was like chef's kiss.
Yeah absolutely. Because most of the podcast intro music, it's like 8 seconds of some free loop. You know, like
yeah.
And then they jump right into it. This one, you know what you're getting into a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Hey, how long have you been doing comedy?
I started in 2013 in Virginia, and then I started in 2016 in New York City. So I've been at it since 2013 now. But I ended up taking a year off in the city because I moved to the city, and then I just fucked around. I spent all my money and just had to work full time for a year. So I didn't really start hitting it in the city till about 2016.
So you weren't doing any open mics at all during that time?
Maybe like once in a while, but definitely not even enough to progress. That's the great thing with the city is, especially pre-pandemic, there is literally dozens of mics a day you could pick from, and you could get up 3-4 times if you wanted to. I was going up like once a week, twice a week, something more frequently, just spending all my money and shit like that. when I got closer to zero, I said, I'm just going to work full time for a year. And I did. And then started hitting it after that because I had a nest egg that I also blew through very fast. So, you know, but at least I got my feet on the ground at that point.
In Virginia, how often were you able to get up where you started?
I was really lucky. I started in Virginia around 2013. Virginia, like Norfolk and Virginia Beach area. That's basically okay. Where we live. I lived in Newport News. But when I was coming up, you could get up like at least 3 to maybe 5 times a week between like open mics and bar shows and shit. If you're willing to drive, there's plenty of stuff to do. But yeah, we were usually getting up. It was only once a night, but just to be able to get up like 4 or 5 nights a week typically was a lot of help. It helped keep us consistent. You know, it was a really good time to come up.
Were you given like more time in Virginia than you get in New York for like per mic?
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Because like that's the thing with the city. You're getting quantity over quality. Yeah. And then in Virginia, there was a lot more quality over quantity because a lot of the open mics would have people. That was the funniest thing when I think about miking in Virginia versus miking in the city is that in the city, all the mics are comedians. It'll be 30, 40 comedians in one room. In Virginia, we had audiences so frequently that when we did go to an open mic that was all comedians, we were so spoiled. Like, what's the point of a fucking mic if it's all comics? Like, we've heard all this shit before. We're so spoiled. We had no idea, yo. So mics in the shows were typically better attended because there ain't shit to do in Newport News, Virginia, you know?
All right. So how'd you actually get started in comedy in Virginia in 2013? What were you doing?
I was in college at the time. And then I had found out there was a comedy club, Kazi's Comedy Club in Newport News, just like a couple miles down the road. And I always wanted to do comedy or stand up. I've been listening to Weird Al since I was like 9. That's how I got into comedy in the first place. But I was also a big band geek. So I thought I was going to be like a funny music guy for a long time. But then I found out about the open mic and I went to the open mic and I was like, oh, I don't even need instruments for this. This is way easier. You know, it's just stand up. So I started doing stand up around then. I went my freshman year, but I didn't have a car. So it's like, I really wasn't doing it. I was mostly just fucking around in your first year in college like you do anyway, you know. But then my sophomore year, I really started going every week and then finding the rest of the bar scene through that, then getting up 5 times a week. It was a lot of fun starting out. The first time I went was a harrowing journey because I was going crazy on campus because I didn't have a car. And I found out about the comedy club. I found out about their open mic. And it was that night, but it was raining. And I was like, well, if it stops raining, I'll take my roommate's bike and I'll go to the comedy club because it's only like 3 miles away. It didn't stop raining. And I was like, fuck it. I'm going to go to the comedy club anyway, because I was so bored and not getting laid at all in college. So I had nothing better to do. And so I took the bike in the rain for 3 miles, vastly overestimated my cardio abilities. I was like an hour late to the fucking mic, gave the host my sob story about I just biked an hour through the rain here and I'm soaking wet. And then he put me on at the end of the mic. And I think I talked about my dick for 5 minutes and it went not bad.
It was not bad.
Yeah, not bad. That's the origin story. Oh, and then it was face sealed from there. There we go.
So your material, though, were you just telling stories or did you actually like prepare anything to talk about?
I prepared a little bit. Okay. I did like very short stories that I thought were funny. Like I said, really like 5 minutes of dick jokes. Like really, that's about where I was at, you know, your first open mic. But it went well. And the dude that was before me was talking about his balls. So it complimented nicely, you know, like it's fitting with the theme.
Good way to end the night.
That's the good thing about the Virginia comedy scene or any small scene where there aren't multiple mics a day is that even in our open mics, like I said, we were spoiled. By the end of the show, you still had audience because no one's going to fucking go anywhere else. So if they leave, they're just being dicks, you know? So even if you're at the end of the open mic, you still do get at least 20 comics there that are at least drunk at that point. So they're listening to you and laughing and shit like that. It was a lot more friendly, a lot easier.
And was it mostly college kids or were like regular adults and stuff?
No, real adults, old school adults. This room had you could smoke in the back room with the pool tables. Yo, this place was old school. I fucking loved it, man. Especially I'm a cigarette smoker. So I thought it was the coolest shit ever. I don't think I'd ever smoked indoors before that club ever. But yeah, it was a really fun place to start. I'm sorry. I'm trailing off. Your question was about stage time here versus stage time in New York, kind of, the mics.
Well, I mean, you can keep going where you're going.
Yeah. No, we're cool.
We're going wherever the night takes us.
I think to bring it back to your original question about the material and starting and the material moving to the city was that it was a lot easier to get a lot of time in Virginia, not only because there was consistent stage time, but like there's showcases and you get 10, 15 minutes. It's normal, you know, like to get that long as a young comic. And then you move to the city and all these fucking mics are like 2, 3, 5 minutes, maybe. And you got to sit through 30 people first. And not only that, in Virginia or starting in any small scene, I think from what I've talked to people is that it's a lot easier to be a big fish in a little pond. In Virginia, there was like maybe 40 of us total comics across the scene that I knew where we're performing every night. In the city, there's thousands of us. You know, there's never, ever, ever a shortage. So you go from being a big fish in a little pond to like bottom of the totem pole, under the dirt, under the totem pole kind of fucking situation. And that's what really sucks the worst. I'm grateful that I got to like beat a big fish in a little pond so I could see what the other side looks like. You know what I mean? When you're getting booked consistently for not even really making money, but at least you're being called on. That took a long time in the city. It took a long fucking time.
Do you think it's better to get to a particular level of a skill level before you can take full advantage of the opportunities in New York as a comedian?
It depends on the person, you know, because like I see a lot of New York comics that started here and they're doing just fine. And I was like, if I started stand up here, I'd probably fucking quit that and try to beatbox on the train or something. It seems fucking easier than this shit, you know, like it can be tough. But I do think there is a lot of advantages to starting outside of the city because you can be a big fish in a little pond and you can make money quicker, probably, you know, like especially if there's any reputable clubs around. They always have the same hosts, same features, you know. Most traveling comics will request like a local feature or a local host, and you can become that guy a lot quicker. But when you're in New York, it's like, you know, the phrase about the gym, like there's always going to be some dude bigger than you at the gym. In New York, there's always someone funnier than you in the room you're in, no matter what fucking room it is. There's always going to be someone funnier than you.
Is there always somebody less funny than you as well? Can you always be that to somebody else? So that's not horrible.
Hopefully. Hopefully
you're not that guy.
the least funny person in New York.
Oh man, I don't know. There's a lot of least funny people in New York. There's so many of them. I always say that's the tough thing about starting the open mics up here is that the scene seems kind of cold because no one really fucks with you until they see you kill, you know? Mm-hmm. But I always say that it's more like when you move up here, you just feel like you're at the bottom of every bucket and no one's really talking to you and shit. And I always say that it's just because I call it apocalypse rules, which is like people don't want to get to know you until they know that you're going to be around for a long time.
Yeah, they don't want to waste your time, right?
Exactly. Yeah, because it's like you see so many fucking people come and go out of the scene that it's like it's normal and it's regular.
Yeah, especially in New York and all, it's pretty easy to do as a hobby because you just get on an open mic whenever you want. You can just like, let's see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the funny shit is that like when I was in Virginia, people were very impressed that I was a comedian and they wanted to fucking hear about it. And then up here, if I say I'm a comedian, they're like, yeah, two of my roommates are comedians. Who gives a shit? Like, they never heard of you. Like,
are you rich? Are you on YouTube? No one fucking cares.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yo, exactly. So it's very easy to get discouraged. But I got to see that other side of success first. You know, by success, I mean the Funny Bone paid me $300 one time. That was my level. That was the most accomplished I ever was in Virginia was hosting one weekend there. But fuck, it was really fun. And $300 to 20-year-old me was or 21-year-old me was all the money in the world at that time.
Oh, definitely. Of course.
My rent was like $400. I thought $300 was fucking crazy.
So you were doing the comedy in Virginia for about 3 years. At what point did you decide to move to New York? What was that tipping point?
I moved to New York in July of 2014.
Oh, okay.
Because I took a big break after I moved because, like I said, spent all my money and fucked around. Mm-hmm. I did comedy in Virginia for about a year and a half. I probably started getting the bug to move like almost a year into comedy, I think. Mostly because I was lucky that I was coming up in a road club. So I was meeting touring comics all the fucking time. Not like some gigantic like Bill Burr or Louis C.K., but like club comics that do the road and shit, you know? All of them were like, you need to move to New York or L.A. as quick as you can. They're like, no one's looking for talent in Newport News, Virginia. That's what I had been told. And I was like, yeah, that's probably true. So being from Virginia, to move to New York was just easier. They said, move to LA if you want to do writing or be on TV.
Yep.
And move to New York if you want to be good at stand-up.
Yep, be funny.
Yeah, exactly. At the time, I was like, I'm too fat and unfuckable to be on TV, and I suck at writing. So I guess I'm going to go get good at stand-up in the city. When I started, I was 80 pounds heavier with no beard and a ponytail. And I say I look like the guy at Petco that specializes in snakes and reptiles. That was my first couple of years of comedy. But yeah, also the move to New York just seemed easier. So that's what I did. And I'm glad I did. I'm really glad I did, yo. I've never been to L.A. Have you all ever been to L.A. before?
I have not been to L.A. It's on my list.
I've never been to L.A.
It's on my list. I really want to perform there. I've been there for like a layover. You know what I mean? Like I didn't get to do any stand-up. I got to see the city a little bit, but I didn't get to do any stand-up, which was a bummer. I talk a lot of shit about LA for some guy who's never been there. I'll be honest. I feel like I'm just repping New York too hard because of my transplant insecurities.
It's kind of a trope, right? Like comics from New York thinking that New York's the best place to do it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But it is. And LA comics continue to prove me right. And New York comics who come back from LA continue to prove me right. I have all the surveys. I have done all the research. You know, I keep hearing from every single person in my life that this is why New York City is better. I was really proud of, are you guys familiar with a spot called the Tiny Cupboard?
No.
It's a comedy club in Brooklyn, basically, that opened during the pandemic because they could fit like 60 or 80 people on their roof comfortably.
Okay.
We started doing shows there. I've been saying it's the only functioning comedy club of 2020 was this rooftop called Tiny Cupboard. And there's a great picture of like on the rooftop, comic on stage, probably like 30, 40 people. Everybody has umbrellas. The whole fucking crowd is under umbrellas like in 300, yo, because it's fucking, it's raining. The comic has an umbrella and they're still performing and the audience still wants to be there. And I was like, this is why LA can't touch us, bro. This is why they can't come fucking close. It's a bunch of super nice weather, fucking improv 101 comedians doing their fucking stand up when it's convenient between auditions. Yo, they don't do the shit in the rain. They don't do the shit. when it's cold, you know? They do it in laundromats. Big fucking deal, yo. We perform next to crackheads in parks and shit like that, yo. Like, you're getting heckled by crackheads and cute dogs over the pandemic. It was fucking... It was a lot. It was a lot. But all that is caveated by, I've never been to LA and I really don't know what I'm talking about. I'm just assuming.
What was like the culture shock from going from like Virginia to New York? I'm sure it had been quite a bit different culturally for you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it was the first time I was ever like self-conscious of how I look. Okay. That's what fucked me up about the city. Because like I said, I was Petco guy in Virginia. But in Virginia, fuck, a fat dude with a beard is pretty, or fat dude with a ponytail is par for the course. Dudes like me everywhere. But then I moved to the city and everybody is fucking smoking hot. It's ridiculous, yo. Like, this is where people come to be models and actors and actresses and dancers and shit like that. There's just so many good looking people everywhere that it fucking, it was the first time I was self-conscious about how I looked in my life. And then I lost a bunch of weight, mostly thanks to food poisoning. That was a fucking nice life hack. I lost 15 pounds in a week. Because of food poisoning.
Oh, wow.
And honestly, like, I don't say this on stage because it's not funny, but honestly, like, that's hospital level fucking food poisoning. I mean, we should have gone to the hospital. But when you're that fucking sick, you're like, I don't want to move. But the culture shock comedy wise was also a big jump because like none of my shit worked. It was really, really fucking frustrating. Shit that I knew worked. Shit that like I'd done at real comedy clubs in front of real audiences. Shit that I knew worked. My A material didn't really fucking work, especially not at open mics. I was only doing open mics. You know, that's all you can do when you move up here.
Because you're performing in front of comedians mostly, right?
Yeah. And I realize now the problem is that like they've just heard all this shit before. Shit that's like funny to us has been done 1,000 times already by 1,000 different comedians. Even now, I'll look back on like my old tapes or my buddy's old tapes from 2014, like shit that we thought was so funny. And then I watch it now and I'm like, yo, this shit is pretty hack, to be honest. Yo, this is like low hanging fucking easy ass fruit. This is not, you know, as revolutionary as we thought it was at the time. But yeah, that's why they don't laugh. That's why they don't laugh at your shit when you move here, because they've heard the same fucking thing. Also, everybody who moved here is like, have you noticed the pigeons about New York? And it's like, yeah, we know. You're not going to tell us anything new about fucking pigeons. Or traffic or any shit like that, you know?
I bet you're going to complain about rent next.
Right, exactly. Like, I was making that mistake a bunch, and none of my old shit was working. And then I lost, like, 80 pounds super rapidly, like, over the course of a year, mostly thanks to that food poisoning and shit. After that, I really wasn't doing comedy at that time. So I went from being a fat dude doing comedy to, like, a skinny, way more attractive dude doing comedy. And that fucked me up. I was not funny for a while because like literally I realized that the day I was at work and I asked my boss for, I worked at a restaurant. I just asked my boss for a proof of employment letter for a lease or whatever. She said, what do you want me to say? And I was like, just say that I work here. I make this much money a week and that I'm like super handsome and charming. And then she went, all right. And then walked away. And I remember thinking like, what the fuck is her problem? That always gets a laugh, you know?
You actually like, are now.
Yeah, that always gets a laugh. And it's because I didn't realize, like, I was so unfuckable. The notion that I was handsome and charming was found very funny every time I said it, which is why I fucking, it's just one of those jokes you keep in the chamber. And I said it to her and I just came off like a fucking douche. And that's when I was like, all my old material doesn't work. Like, and when I was on stage at Mike's, I realized that even jokes that weren't fat guy jokes depended on me being fat for them to work. That's a big thing in comedy. They say that your material got to match how you look to an extent. And even shit that wasn't really about being fat, like wasn't as funny anymore. I remember realizing it on a joke about, I used to have a joke about a hookup and I would lead in by saying I was about to get my biannual fuck. So I was excited. That always worked. And then it just never worked. And I was like, I was frustrated. I'm like, I'm still not getting laid either. You know, that joke is still fucking true. Like, even if you think I could get laid more, biannual is still about the rate there for a little while. You know, fucking took me a minute. But yeah, no, it changes a lot. I mean, your material is always changing and evolving.
Yeah.
Should be. This natural part of the process.
Do you think that every comic goes through like a kind of a hacky stage where they're trying to figure things out?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think that's necessary?
yeah, that's like your first 2 or 3 years, you know, like you're going to like, I have tapes from my first 2 or 3 years where like, I can literally listen to the tape and be like, oh, I was listening to a lot of Hannibal Buress that week.
You just start talking like him.
I sound just like Hannibal Buress. Yeah. Like from the tone and delivery, everything, you know, and that's, I've heard that's a common thing though. I've heard a lot of people say that like when you start comedy, you're just like a combination of all your favorite comedians until you find your voice. That's the best you can do is just emulate the people you like until it turns into your voice eventually. And some people are just unbearably funny and they've been, you know, touched on the forehead by God and they just know their voice immediately and they're already crushing it and shit. But I think most people are going to go through, you know, are awful when they start, you know, like it's the same thing as like a fucking sixth grader with a saxophone, you know, like yeah. He's not going to sound good the first year. He might sound great in eighth grade, but he's going to suck ass in sixth grade for a while. It's the same thing. It's just our instrument is dick jokes.
Tom Segura he said he used to like emulate Chris Rock. He used to like try and talk just like him too, which is, I think is hilarious.
Yeah.
It does not match.
any white guy like emulating a black comedian, I think is funny.
I've totally done that on accident a ton of times. Mostly because in Virginia, I came up, there were a ton of black rooms when I started in Virginia. Like there was no shortage. That's where we would go. And so they called it the Chitlin Circuit, which I didn't even know what the fuck that was when I started, but I was doing the Chitlin Circuit as often as I could. And so I moved to New York and everyone's like, why are you trying to sound like a black guy? I'm like, no, just this is how I sound most of the time. I was like, what? You know, white trash sounds like that too. You know, like a lot of cussing and a bunch of y'alls, yo, it's the same shit. It's just white trash. It's New Yorkers think they're so fucking cultured. I'm like, you know, shit about white trash. That's why I sound like that, yo.
And when did you start developing that voice though? Like, what was that turning point for you?
I don't know. I think it's like I fade in and out of it. You know what I mean? I can be calm on stage and mellow, but when I get excited about something, that's what I'm going to sound like. The only time I feel like I've ever overstepped that was there was one time at a roast battle. I went like full Martin Lawrence on a chick just because I was fucking hitting way too hard. That was embarrassing. The judges called me up. That was the worst part was that my jokes were hitting super fucking hard. But even the judges were like, I don't like how you caught the Holy Ghost and turned into a black preacher all of a sudden. You don't sound like that. But like the problem is that all the jokes I had written were very fucking old school Def Jam. The first one was I was going up against this girl that I love. Her name Vanetta. She's a great lady. But I said, just like this, I was like, Vanetta's titty's so big. And I give a big pause. I said, Vanetta's titty's so big, she got that hour and a half glass figure. And then fucking that crushed. And I kept going with like three more Vanetta's titty's so big jokes. They were like, yeah, you don't sound like that. Those are good jokes, but you don't sound like that. I was like getting applause breaks and shit. You know, I was excited. I thought I was feeding off the energy. Never something I do on purpose. Like I said, I attribute it mostly to white trash. I was definitely fucking straight Martin Lawrence that night when those jokes were hitting, though. It was, it got away from me a little bit.
Do you still do roast battles?
Yeah, I love them. I need to redeem myself. I've been on a string of L's recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. I love roast battle. I think it's like one of the funnest things you can do in stand up just because I also think of myself as kind of competitive. You know what I mean? And stand up is always such a fucking compete against yourself sport that it's like kind of nice to legitimately win once in a while, you know, in a competition. I really like them. I've been getting fucked up at them recently because it's hard to keep the muscle. Roast writing is a fucking different comedy muscle. And if you just don't use it that much, then you start to lose it. You know, it's not riding a bike.
What would you say is the biggest difference with roast writing?
It's much more formulaic and punchy, you know? Also, I think just the biggest difference is it has to be as absolutely short as possible. Or if it's going to be long, it better have a gigantic payoff. But writing for roast is very much more XYZ, whereas you could do anything with your material. The roast joke's got to be short and punchy. I've seen people try to do long setups and exposition, and that shit does not work. The shit that works in roast battle is basically just like, your mom's a whore, your fucking dad's dead, this guy drowns and cum. Like, that's just funny. I've done roasts where I lost, and then I'll watch someone I really like destroy, and they're just destroying because they said the dude drowns and cum. And I'm like, I just need to get back to basics. Don't think that hard. Just fucking have fun and talk about cum, and it will probably go well. it's a lot more formulaic, I think.
It's a lot more about the writing as opposed to like delivery as well, right? Would you say that's true?
Not exactly. I feel like I've been finding out the hard way. I feel like I've been losing my confidence, battling. And I saw it a lot in the last, I just battled like a week ago against a dude named Nathan Orton, who's fantastic. I was watching a video of it and I keep like looking to the audience for approval, which is stupid as shit and should never, ever, ever do that. And I used to really perform, you know what I mean? Like just say them and have a great time, sit, memorize them. That's a big part of it, but say them and perform them, you know, like I just felt like I got burned the other night because I did a roast. And there was like 9 people there. It was a dead crowd. And I'm a very, very personality, energy driven type stand up. So if I don't have any fucking energy in the room, my shit looks goofy if I'm like overperforming for 9 people. And then the other guy I was going up against was very deadpan, but just laser sharp fucking writer. So he did great. You know, like he was thriving in that environment. Yeah, writing for roast is just a lot more formulaic. But when you get it, bro, it feels to me, it feels almost more like a puzzle. Like when you hit it just right, it's as satisfying as putting in that last little jigsaw piece. It's so much more fun. Also, roasting's more fun because comedy, you can get laughs, but roast battles, you can get those that shit is so much better. That shit is so much better than laughs. I've gotten fucking thousands of laughs in my time. I think I can count the number of oohs I got on one hand, you know, like maybe 2. I've done a lot of roasts. I've had a couple good moments with those. Those are the most satisfying things ever, because it's like not only does that mean that you're joke crushed, but you also walked that disrespectful line super close, you know, and they let you get away with it. The audience was impressed. I was saying that's how you win roast battles, is by being viciously funny and a little disrespectful.
Have you ever had any jokes that you felt bad about afterwards? Kind of left a sick feeling in your heart?
No, fuck them.
Yeah. No, I can literally only think of one, and it was fucking years ago. I said sorry immediately after it. It was a little overkill in the moment. I was roasting this guy, and the backstory with it was this dude, he was roasting me, but like the week before that, he had lost to another comic, and then he immediately challenged him to a rematch. Like right afterwards, because you can call people out afterwards if you want to roast, just say who you want to roast. And he wanted to go back up against the same comic. And my joke was something to the effect of, I'm not going to do it justice, but it was something like, I already mentioned that his mom had died like 2 years ago or something like that. I already mentioned that in the roast, but I said something about he lost a roast and then immediately challenged her to a rematch. I said, oh, at least when your mom loses a battle, she shuts the fuck up. And I'm glad the joke worked, but I was like, I'm sorry. That was way too far. That was way too much. You know, I like this guy. You know, like he's one of my buddies.
Was he pissed about it?
No. He didn't care at all. You know, I don't think he thought it was funny, but I don't think we're still home. We're still good friends to this day. That was the only time I was like, yeah, that one's harsh, you know. That one's a little harsh.
Have you ever gotten your feelings hurt?
The only time I've ever had my feelings hurt was at this roast battle recently, less than a week ago. I've been doing this shit for like maybe 4 years, 5 years. Only time I've ever gotten my feelings hurt was, like I said, I did this roast against Nathan Orton, who's fucking hilarious. He's a great comic. He annoys me because he's too perfect and he memorized all his jokes like a fucking goody two-shoes. And I was writing new ones. That's the other thing. We took the battle on less than 24 hours notice. We were filling in for someone else because we had already battled. But like, I wanted to write different jokes because I didn't want to hit them with all the same material, you know? So I was just going to replace a couple jokes. So I not only had to try to relearn my material, I was trying to write one or two new ones to replace the stinkers from last time and rebuttals on top of that. So I had my phone on stage. And when I came into the green room before the battle, Nathan, I swear to God, was just sitting there meditating, like not moving, fucking headphones in, hands on his laps, quiet like this. Fuck, he's taking this really seriously. Like this is the undercard fight, you know? And then we went up. He did a lot better than me. He was great. One of the judges said something like, you know, Nathan didn't have to look at his phone and you were looking at your phone and it just felt like some open mic shit. And not only did I groan, the audience groaned. Like the comics and the audience groan, because it's like, that's the rudest shit I've ever heard in my fucking life. I was like, also, I shouldn't have been a pussy. That should have been my moment to be like, we took this battle today and I had fucking work and two spots before this. So not all of us have time to memorize this fucking shit. All right. You know, like, this is not open mic shit. This is me having 30 fucking jokes that I could use, but I'm not memorizing them. I have stoner memory. My head is not still kicking. But when he said that open mic shit, even Nathan was like, yo, he didn't have to say that. You know, like, he could have just said, I'm giving it to Nathan because he didn't need his phone and you did. Like, that would have been totally fair. And there are some battles when I have more than a fucking day's notice, I have my shit memorized, you know? That open mic shit, that was like, I was like, I don't even fucking know you, yo. How are you going to say that shit? Fuck you. Like, at least if it was one of my friends, I could be like, eat a dick, you know? But I'm like, I don't know this guy.
Yeah, you don't know me like that.
How much time do you typically have to prepare?
It depends on the show. This one was at New York Comedy Club, which is 13. So it's like usually three rounds. That's how bad I lost. I got stomped in two. So I didn't even fucking get to use most of the new jokes that I had written that I thought were fire that I spent all day trying to practice. It's always at New York. It's three rounds. First round, three jokes. And then the second and third round is five jokes. So you're expected to walk in with 13 fucking jokes and rebuttals on top of that. That's what they're looking for. That's a lot of fucking jokes. That's a ton. Most of the like undercard fights are like weekly roast shows where it's like young comics. Most roast battles are going to be like five jokes each, tit for tat, and that's it. Until you get a main event, which is going to be closer to like 10 or 12 jokes, you know, so it could be three rounds. A lot of the times the fights are either like five jokes or like 13. And it takes a lot of fucking time to write 13 jokes. Like I said, unless you've just been touched on the forehead by God and you can just crank them out. And I've seen dudes do it, you know. For me, it takes a lot of time to put these fucking puzzle pieces together.
Does that help you with crowd work? Like writing roast jokes?
Not at all. No. Not at all. Sometimes can be really helpful to respond to the crowd in the moment. If you have something funny, some funny quick thing based on whatever they did, it gets you more brownie points, you know, because not only are you good with your written shit, you're good at responding to the room. That's a big part of roast battle is you don't necessarily know what the person's going to say about you. So if you can respond quickly or have something in the chamber ready, then it just gets you, earns you more points. And that's the kicker with roast battle is that the dudes that do this a lot, like, we already fucking know what you're going to say about it. That's the funny thing with comics. There's like maybe a couple angles on every person. There's he's fucking fat or someone in his family is famous or this or this. Like for me, it's like I got fucking long hair. They call me sexually confused. They call me Thor. They call me Jesus. They talk about my wife. They talk about my wife being foreign. It's like I know what the fuck they're going to say. Honestly, I'm giving them a lot to work with. Like I get a lot of look-like jokes and I realize that's my fault and I'm fine with that. But then again, like, so I know what they're going to say about me so I can write rebuttals. That's a big part of it and that helps. But other than that, you got to have 13 pretty solid jokes you're ready to use on top of that in case they hit you with some shit you weren't expecting. I've written so many rebuttals to shit that people did not mention at all. And that joke is no longer usable. Doesn't make any fucking sense because they didn't say anything. Tough to strategize and plan around.
What was some of the ones that really threw you through a loop that you weren't really expecting?
Man, I've heard so many good ones, dude. I was saying the one that caught me off guard is one of those things that where people use the same angle on me all the time. And one of them, I always tell people I got arrested at a Black Lives Matter protest in 2014. And so many people have tried to make jokes about that. And there has only been one good one. Only one comic nailed the fucking joke, which was a girl named Isabel Hagen. Was super fucking funny. And her joke was, Steven got arrested at a Black Lives Matter protest. He wasn't doing anything. He just went to the cops like, yo, get me out of here. Oh my God, that caught me off guard. I laughed so hard. I thought that was the funniest shit I'd ever heard in my fucking life. That's my favorite part of roast battle. I always joke that I'm so narcissistic. People are like, they're too scared to have people write jokes about them, but I'm so narcissistic. I'm like, you wrote jokes about me all week. I want to hear everything. I want to hear what's in the drafts folder. You know, like I'm excited for it. Like there's nothing you can say that can really fucking hurt me that bad. Yeah. I'm trying to think. There's never been a fucking joke that really made me real. Never been anything that bad.
I'd be surprised if somebody could compete with my inner dialogue.
Right. Exactly. I'm like, whatever you can say is not going to surprise me. It's not going to shock me. And it can't hurt me. And it can't be any worse than all the shit I say to myself. Oh, I just remembered another joke that caught me off guard that I think might be my favorite joke ever was it was my birthday. So we did a birthday roast after our show And of course, I'm just getting fucked up all night because it's my birthday. Do you know a comic named Momo Poojay?
No.
Fucking hilarious comic out of Philly. I think he's living in New York again now. But he said, Steven has such a drug problem. He texted me about this show and it had coke residue on it. I was like, fuck. Oh, wait. I'm trying to remember my buddy Dan Wicks. If we're going to talk about roasting, we can't not talk about Dan Wicks, who's my fucking boy. He's one of the best fucking roast joke writers, like, period. I think the reason I've been bombing is because I'm trying not to lean on him to punch up my shit so hard. So I've been losing all my fucking battles. But that's my writing process, is I'll write 20 jokes and send them to Dan. He's like, these three are worth the shit. Fuck. And I go back and keep writing. Dan had some really fucking funny ones. I always think my favorite roast jokes ever is from him. This is not my story, but this is my favorite biting joke I think I've ever heard. If I was this guy, I would be upset, probably, because I wish I had been there to see the dude. He roasted in L.A., which is why, like I said, New York comics better than L.A. comics. This dude didn't have a fucking chance against my boy Dan. This dude's big claim to fame, or at least he was doing a lot of material about, like, trying to kill himself at some point. And so Dan said his girlfriend broke up with him when he found out that he was cheating on her with a rope. And it's already very funny. And then the guy came back at him, made some joke about how he sounds like a robot, because he fucking does. He's very monotone. I literally dressed as a Dan Wicks robot for Halloween. He sounds like a robot. So the dude made fun of him for sounding like a robot. And Dan came back with, like, I understand that you resent me for sounding like a robot, because I remind you of a machine that brought you back to life against your will. And then fucking room dead, like, open the fucking roast battle on a body bag. And I'm like, you can't prepare for that type of shit. You know, like, he's too good. And he's roasted me like 5 or 6 times now. Like, I hate it. I'm done with it. You know, like, I think the first two times we roasted each other, I think I beat him. I know I beat him for sure the first time. This is in both our first years of roasting. I think we fought twice and I think I won both times. And he has been fucking taking it out on me since then, yo. Like, he cannot fucking not go for the kill. He's the best, yo. But like I said, that's why roast bag got a little disrespectful.
So the roast scene, it sounds similar to, like, the stand-up scene a little bit in New York. So is there, like, just, like, certain clubs that do roasting, like, every night, or?
All the comics who do stand-up also do roasting.
Okay.
You know? There's just comics that are more into roasting, and then there are comics that are more into stand-up. And I always lose a little respect for comics anytime, like, oh, I don't know if I could do the roasting. Like, I fucking, I hate hearing that for whatever the fuck reason you have, which is always a dumb reason, you know, about, like, they always say, like, oh, I'm too nice, or I don't think I can handle people saying that shit about me. I'm like, you're a stand-up comic. You're a fucking narcissist. You'd be fine. You know, we're all fucking narcissists. You know, you don't have to act like you have any of these fucking virgin ears that you're talking about right now. You know, like, we're comics, but also I'm a big believer in, like, you're also an entertainer. So you should be good at a little bit of everything. Have your main thing that you like a lot, which is stand-up, but you should be able to do a little everything, which is why stand-up comics take improv classes and shit, you know, which is why they do auditions acting, for acting.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you're an entertainer. You should be good at entertaining. So when people are turning down roasts because I'm too nice, I'm like, nah, you sound like a bitch right now, dude. You make me want to roast you even more right now, dude. Like, fucking don't say that shit, you know? Like, but it's that's the thing with roast. People think it's the meanest thing ever. Like, most of the time when I have a battle, if I don't know the person that well, I will message them or they will message me and they will say, is there, like, anything off the table? That happens a lot, you know, like, they will ask, is there anything you don't want me to bring up? And you can say whatever you want, you know, like, I don't have any crazy family history or anything that I'm ashamed of, you know, but some people, like, they have personal shit that they don't want out there, you know, like, I always say, go easy on my wife, please. Like, I'm not going to say you can't bring up my wife. That would be completely unfair in a roast battle. Please go easy, yo. Like, and she's always down for it. She's never heard anything that fucking pissed her off before. Always the same comics in both. The same comics that I see doing roasts are the same ones I see out stand-up mics and shit like that.
You run a few shows in New York, right?
I have run a few shows before. I'm really only doing one at the moment, which is in Bushwick. It's a show called Pop Collar Comedy. I co-produced it with my boy Dan Wicks that I was telling you about. It's technically his show. I'm like the stepmom. He gets no fucking respect. Nah, I started with him like years ago because the cafe opened. They had a nice basement for this show space. Dan lived three doors down, so he started the show immediately. And I was like on the seventh one. I was in very early. And I just started going to every show because it was the only show I could walk home from. And then pretty soon after that, I started working at the cafe. And so I was literally clocking into Bark. You know, I was just telling people about the shows every weekend. So that's when I started promoting and producing with Dan. So we've been doing that for like 4 or 5 years now. And that's the only like steady one. I've produced a ton of like other one-off shows or shows that didn't run that long or whatever, you know, but that's the one with the staying power right now. It's been a lot of fun. It's been great.
So are you usually hosting that?
Yeah, frequently. Yeah. Mostly because before the pandemic, we were only doing Saturday at 8 p.m. Now we're trying to do Saturday 7 p.m. and 9 p.m., which can be kind of a bitch because it's hard enough to fill one room. Now we're trying to fill two rooms on the same day. I will usually host one of those shows. And a lot of times if a host drops, then I'm there to fill in. So I end up hosting a lot. Most of my spots have become host spots. I've started hosting a ton of shit over the city, like especially at the start of the pandemic. I always say because I'm a loud son of a bitch and we didn't have microphones, you know, performing in parks and shit like that. But I've also been told that I'm like a golden retriever in a human's body. So I tend to gravitate towards hosting. Yeah, yeah. I gravitated towards hosting pretty quickly. And so like all of a sudden, like after the pandemic started, like more than half of my spots were like host spots, which I'm happy about. It's made my set a lot cleaner because you can't be super blue up top. Like we talked about earlier, I tried hosting and talking about eating ass. That shit doesn't work. The audience got to be a little bit more drunk for that.
Yeah, loosen up, if you will.
You can't be hosting at 7 p.m. talking about eating ass when people are eating food and shit like that in front of you. Yo, that shit doesn't work. So my set has gotten a lot cleaner because I was hosting a ton. The crowd work's gotten a little better. It used to be my Achilles heel. Now I can at least handle it. You know, I don't think I'm Big Jay Oakerson or any shit like that, but I can handle a little crowd work. And the hosting has become a lot of fun. Hosting is like, it's like the only comedy job, like as far as stand-up goes, because when you're hosting, there's a lot of responsibility on you to get the show off on the right foot. I was joking to somebody. I was like, if your host sucks, there's a fucking good chance the first half of your show is going to suck too until someone saves it. And I've learned that the hard way plenty of times, but.
So you've bombed hosting before?
Oh, fucking hundreds of times. Yeah, absolutely. Doesn't happen as often anymore, which is good. Still happens sometimes. You know, I can't fucking control every room. Or you just have off days once in a while. Now I'm a lot better at it. But holy fuck, I've bombed a lot of hosting spots for sure. Like I said earlier, I'd be talking about gross shit like eating ass or putting Sharpies in my butt or something, you know, like that I think is hilarious. They're not feeling it. Or my crowd work sucked. Also, what's funny, we were talking about Virginia earlier. I got it when I was in Virginia. I got it in my head that I was like this great host. I started hosting all the time in Virginia. And that's the difference between like the Virginia audiences and the New York City audiences is that the Virginia audiences, they're usually paying and they're fucking coming out to have a good time. A lot of fucking New York City rooms, people were barked in like 6 minutes before. They didn't think they're seeing a fucking comedy show. So they're sitting there with their arms crossed, like, you better be Jerry Seinfeld, you fucking asshole, like that vibe. It's a lot harder. And when I was in Virginia, I got it in my head that I was this great host because I was being asked to host all the time. I did no crowd work when I was hosting, ever. Not once. I didn't have to. I could just jump in with my material and people were down for it, you know? But up here, you have to do crowd work because crowd work loosens people up. It loosens the whole room up, especially if you have like a fucking quiet, dead room, which you have pretty frequently up here. And the first time I ever hosted was at Greenwich Village Comedy Club, which I thought was a big fucking deal because it's a comedy club and I'm hosting shit like that. It was a produced 7 p.m. show. Thought it was going to be amazing. It was like 8 apathetic tourists. I'm pretty sure none of them spoke any fucking English. Except for 2 of them, I was like, where are you guys from? And they're like, Idaho. I was like, great, here's my material. I don't know shit about Idaho. Here's my fucking material. You know, like, that was my hosting. It was trash. I ate my dick off. The next comic ate their dick off because the audience is already not having a good time. There's a lot of weight on the host's shoulders. It's a lot of fun when you know what you're doing. I also feel very spoiled because I worked at a comedy club for about a year and a half. Before the pandemic, I used to bar back at New York Comedy Club. I'd watch the show all the time and I was just learning from their hosts. a lot of comics get very hard on themselves about hosting because they'll go up and they won't have as good a set as they normally would if they're doing a guest spot, if they were doing a regular 10-minute spot. The host is not even really supposed to kill. The host is supposed to set the table. I like that phrasing a lot. And if you're really lucky, you might get to eat a little bit. That's your fucking job, meaning warm them the fuck up however you can, mostly using crowd work. And if you're really lucky and they're a good crowd, you can do a little of your material. And it's like, you should do a little bit of your material so they're ready to hear material. Because the problem is a lot of hosts, they'll talk to people the entire set. And then the first comic will go on and then the audience thinks you can talk to them. And you can't, you know, that's just a host thing. You know, like you can talk to me because I'm the host. We're friends. We're cool. But you need to shut your fucking mouth during every other performer. All right.
Don't talk to James.
Yeah. Don't look him in the eyes. You say three words. We'll kick you the fuck out. All right. Don't get it wrong. We're friends. We're cool. I'm the host. I'm a fun guy. Remember? But you shut the fuck up for the rest of the show. So if you don't mention that, you know, like that could be a problem. But with like, even with the crowd work, like that's why crowd work is so important. Was you do a lot of small rooms in the city, a lot of fucking more comics on the lineup than people type rooms. And it's like, there's so much psychology that goes into stand up and like making people laugh, which is like why clubs pack you in shoulder to shoulder. So you're less afraid to laugh. If you feel isolated, you won't laugh as loud because you're subconsciously worried someone's going to think your laugh is weird or some shit. So when you're doing those tiny little rooms, the reason crowd work is so important is because crowd work makes the room, instead of it feeling like a group of people or a crowd, it makes them feel like a community all of a sudden. It makes them feel like they know each other all of a sudden. And now you can laugh in front of people you know on unapologetic. Like, you don't have to ask anybody their names. A lot of people, you know, might get weirded out if you ask them their name at a comedy show or whatever. You know, you just ask where they're from. And then all of a sudden they can laugh with each other because they all know where they're from, at least. That's the most important thing, is just making the room, getting the room warmed up. That's all that matters, y'all. And there's a lot of responsibility on the host to do that.
And when you're doing like regular stand-up, like an actual set, do you have a tendency of doing more crowd work because of all the hosting, or are you able to like separate the two?
Nah, I separate them a lot. Okay. Mostly because like I host so much that like, yeah, I've been joking around about having dirty material about eating ass and shit like that. Over the pandemic, I was hosting so much, I forgot all my blue shit. It had been so long since I'd gotten to be super dirty on stage. I got booked on like a blue show at Stand Up New York, which is a comedy club. So I'm like, I want to do well. And fortunately, I had two shows beforehand. I tried to run all my old favorite material, the gross shit about eating ass and putting Sharpies in my butt, the shit I used to love doing on a nightly basis, forgot all of it. I couldn't, like, I was losing my pacing, forgetting what word was next, forgetting what part was next. And so the hosting has changed my set so much that, like, I don't get to practice the blue stuff as much anymore. So when I get to do a regular set, it's a lot cleaner now, which I think is not a bad thing, but I'll try to get dirty in like the last 5 minutes if I can. I love doing a regular set and just being able to be really dirty immediately. As soon as the audience likes you, you can talk about whatever the fuck you want, you know?
And do you have a tendency of like trying to book more cleaner work because of your set?
No, not at all. Okay. I'm still not that clean. I'm really not that clean. Like,
fair enough.
I'm just a lot cleaner than I used to be, which is a very low bar, you know? So I'm only saying it because I actually did my first feature weekend in September, comedy club called Sandman Comedy Club. The first time I featured. So that's 25 minutes, five shows, Thursday to Saturday. And my parents came to those shows. And my parents have seen me do all my disgusting shit before plenty of times. And even my parents were like, that was pretty clean for your set. You know, like I think I had like one vibrator joke in there. I have a bunch of drug jokes, but like I barely count that as dirty.
Nah, that's pretty tame.
I realized I couldn't do it at like a Catholic church, but like, you know, you could still talk about weed on TV. My set's gotten a lot cleaner because of it. So I think that's a good thing. But now I need to dust off that ass eating material.
Do you have any like who's your all time favorite comedian? Like who'd you say like your biggest influences are?
Probably Bill Burr. He's like my number one guy, has been my number one guy for a really long time. I like a ton of people though, and I filter through people and listen to new people. I feel like I'm late to the fucking bandwagon with Chris DiStefano. I just started listening to podcasts like a month or two ago, and he's so fucking funny. I've been in New York for almost seven fucking years, and this is the first time I'm hearing about this guy, you know?
Yeah, I love his podcast with Sal Volcano, Taste Bud, or not Taste Buds, Hey Babe. Yeah.
Hey Babe, dude, all I listen to at work is Hey Babe and Taste Buds. So, and Chrissy Chaos. And Chrissy Chaos is all I listen to. And that was actually the funny shit was when I was bar backing at New York Comedy Club, I saw Sal Volcano once in a while. Like, he'd come in and like we never really talked at length, but he was always very friendly and nice. And I was friendly and nice to him because I know the Impractical Jokers. Now, the other day he came in and like all of a sudden I was like fangirling, like too afraid to say anything to him. You know what I mean? I was like, all I fucking do is listen to this dude all day and he's right there now, which is crazy. I was literally like brushing my hair in the green room hoping he would come in. And he
did it. Just give him a little flip.
Yeah, right, exactly. I feel like I had like a cheat code beforehand. It was like I had the New York Comedy Club shirt, New York Comedy Club hat. So it was like always very easy to just be like, how you doing, man? You good? Like, can I get you anything? You know, like that's a very easy way to lead into a conversation if you work there, you know? But now I'm like, now I'm just some fucking scrub comic trying to suck up to him. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be that fucking guy. Like, he hasn't performed yet. He's going over his notes. I don't want to bug him. That shit, yeah. It was the first time I was fangirling over him, which I thought was funny. I didn't think that could happen of, like, not fangirling to all of a sudden fangirling all of a sudden.
It's weird with the podcast, like, because you listen to these people like all the time.
Yeah, you feel like you're friends of them. Yeah,
you know, you're basically you're it's like a one sided friendship, you know. And then you meet them, you know everything about them. They don't know anything about you. It's like a weird imbalanced relationship.
Yeah, well, what's also funny is I really only started listening to the No Press Network guys because I know Homeless Pimp.
Oh, like, okay.
He was taking photographs of comics in the city. Before he fucking started making it big and working with all these celebrities and shit like that. I got some headshots from him a few years ago. Like, we'd see each other at the mics all the time. And I hired him to take pictures at me and my wife's engagement party.
Oh.
I love Mike. I just never get to see him around anymore, you know? Like, and I'm like, I started listening to those podcasts just to hear his goofy little laugh in the background, you know? And now I'm just listening all day, every fucking day, because I get to see these guys sometimes, you know, and they're fucking hilarious. But I need to start a podcast eventually, but I still haven't yet.
I think you'd be good at that. You speak well.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I had two failed podcasts that I think had a lot of potential. Was the first one I really liked was me with two other dudes, with Dan Wicks, guy I was talking about earlier, and my buddy Charlie McCracken. The podcast turned into, we called it Steven's Weekly Intervention. I think it's a very good title because they're both pretty square. And the first episode just ended up being them asking me about drugs. So that's how we landed on the name of Steven's Weekly Intervention. We recorded a couple episodes that were great, but then I feel like we learned the hard way to pay for a producer because we had one of our friends do it for free. And some of the episodes sounded good, but then some of them just like sounded like they were recorded on a fucking iPhone in an airplane, you know? Like, I was like, how is that possible? It was the same equipment every fucking time. And so we ended up not releasing anything because we couldn't use a lot of it. And then the other podcast that I thought was great, we started, me and two other friends started one called Duolingo Bros. So it's just three dudes learning languages on Duolingo and talking about it, maybe trying to get some sponsorship or something. I don't know. We just were all on Duolingo. So we started a podcast, but we started it in, like, of course, February 2020, some shit like that. So the world locked down and then we all had to stay in our homes. So it was a lot harder to podcast all of a sudden. You know,
I feel like it's been easier podcasting with the pandemic because people are more like everyone has webcams now. Everyone has like microphones and shit like that because of the work and all.
That's true. Because I remember we did try to record one. My boy moved back to Ohio. We tried to record one. And I recorded the whole hour and had no audio. And I was like, what the fuck? How does this work?
Holy shit.
I don't know how this works.
Yeah, that's such a heart wrencher. Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, man, that was heartbreaking. They're just like, whatever, bro. It's all good. It happens. I'm just like, I don't know about anything well enough to podcast about. Now I'm like, well, now I don't have any other good ideas. Like,
your music parodies, how did that come about? I know you said you're a Weird Al fan originally.
Yeah, dude, I've been writing parodies since I was 9 years old. You know, that's my problem. I've published very little of them. And it's mostly because I suck at singing. I don't sing for shit. So I'm like, any parody I write of a song I've never published because I don't sound good. And then otherwise, I just don't have the means to make the music video that I want to make for it. The first parody I ever wrote was when I was 9 years old. I wrote a parody of Breaking the Habit by Linkin Park. Are you familiar with that song?
Absolutely, yeah.
my parody was Hunting for Wabbits by Elmer Fudd. And so I thought it was funny, the idea of Elmer Fudd singing this emo-ass song. I'm hunting for wabbits tonight. Like, it was honestly not bad for a nine-year-old, you know? I've written a bunch of shit that just never moved on filming it, which is dumb and annoying, and I should. And I know I should. Shit costs money, you know? Like, yeah. Shit costs money. And I'm like, I don't have that type of money. And it's like, that's my problem. Is like I see the video in my head perfectly. And I'm like, I'm not going to make it unless it looks exactly how I want to make it. Cause I was raised on Weird Al. My standards are very fucking high. I need it to look like the video it's parodying, you know? And I'm not going to put out a fucking slideshow of me half-ass singing this song with pictures. I can't have a bad voice and put on a shitty slideshow. Something's got to give. I've written a bunch of parodies in my time, like a ton of them. Do have some shit published. During the pandemic, I put out a bunch of music videos during the lockdown.
Yeah, I saw the dog one, the cute ass puppy, or
yeah, cute ass puppy, cute ass
yeah,
puppy.
It's just hysterical.
I like your moniker on YouTube, like new videos every quarantine.
Yeah, yeah. Bro, I think I'm keeping that now because I put it up during the pandemic, and now I'm like, yeah, I never upload, so honestly, this is fitting. You know? And I really did put up like a dozen videos during quarantine.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm keeping my track record. If you look at my videos, all those shits were published a year and a half ago and not one since. I'm very, very true to my word, you know? I did the cute ass puppy. The other one I filmed a bunch for TikTok. I was purposefully trying to make them a minute long for TikTok. I did the hashtag at the time was stay the fuck home. So I wanted to start the hashtag Drake the fuck home. And it was a bunch of Drake parodies about staying home. I did three of them. The one that I love the most, it's only on YouTube because TikTok took it down. I thought it was fucking hilarious. I wrote a parody of Jumpman called Cum Man. And it's just about if Drake was single during the pandemic, and it's just about jerking off all day, every day, you know, and a lot of us did during those dark days, you know, and that was so fun to film and record and shit like that. But yeah, I got that shit on TikTok and on a couple on YouTube. I have a Denzel parody that I fucking love. Ricky by Denzel Curry. There we go. He has a song Ultimate, which was really big a few years. That's my fucking problem, is I find a song that I love and I find out it's like 5 years old and I do a parody of it anyway.
Super outdated.
Yeah, that's almost why I was bummed out about a cute ass puppy. Cause I did make that in a timely manner. I put out that video like maybe a week or two after they put out the video for WAP. So I was like, I thought like, I feel like that's what I've learned watching all these YouTubers and shit do parodies, that you don't necessarily have to have the funniest parody. You just have to have the first one.
The first one, yeah.
Yeah, so like when a song breaks big and then your parody is the first one made, then that's the first parody people see. So like I thought I was doing really good getting a jump on this, and then fucking nothing, and all the rest of the WAP parodies are trash. You didn't hear me say that. But I was really proud of the puppy one. So it's really easy to make, you know, that's been always my biggest fucking concern is about making a good video. I'm like, well, it's pandemic, so I can get away with a GoPro and an iPhone, you know, like it makes something halfway decent. But yeah, that one was so fun to film. I love that dog. I love that dog.
So I do have one other question.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Your Instagram. I saw you post a lot of pictures of your wife.
Oh, yeah.
Thirst traps.
Yes. So I've been posting, the series is called Copying My Wife's Thirst Traps Until She Divorces Me. So she'll post a thirst trap, or I'll find an old one and then pose exactly the same as her, usually with a funny face. And then I post them back to back. It bothers me how successful those are. Like everybody has been talking to me about that shit. I'm like, bro, I should just quit my job and do this full time if this is gonna make me blow up. You know, like this shit gets more likes than any stand-up I've ever posted in my life. This shit is, everybody's talking to me about it. It's so fun. I appreciate you. I appreciate you bringing it up, but like, I'd be telling her, I'm like, you got to post more skin on Instagram because I'm running out of thirst trap. The people are expecting it now, dude. I've set a high standard.
That's all stuff that she's posted on her own social media.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like thirst traps she sent me in private. Exactly. It's shit she already posted on social media. That was some funny shit, dude. The first time my mom saw it, it was a particularly skin-ass fucking photo, you know, like half naked in the bathroom or whatever. And she called me because she was on Instagram and she was like, you post pictures of your wife like that? And I was like, mom, swipe left. like that. And then she saw my picture. She goes, oh, that's funny. She's like, I thought you were just posting fucking nudes of your wife. I was like, no, first of all, she posted them first. And then I just posted them to my page for clout, I guess. And because, listen, you want to grow your Instagram followers, show some titty. That's been the rule one since the dawn of time. All right. That's, I'm just riding the bandwagon. I didn't discover anything new, you know?
We usually ask one last question of our guests. Any words of wisdom you wish you would have got when you first started out comedy that you wish you would have, someone would have told you?
I got some words of wisdom recently that like kind of reaffirmed my belief. Like it was something I did believe for a long time. And then I was wavering and then they reaffirmed it. Comic named Liz Melee, who I like a lot, very funny lady in the city. I was just hanging out at New York, at New York Comedy Club, and I was trying to weasel my way into getting a check spot or a late night spot or something, little 5-minute spot on a show I wasn't supposed to be on, you know? And then Liz came out, and then she was saying that the audience was shit, and that they're tired and not fun, and blah, blah, blah. And so I was like, oh, so it's probably not, you know, worth weaseling my way onto. And then she went, oh, no, every show is worth weaseling your way onto. Just very matter of fact like that. And I was like, I had fucking talked with somebody about that the night before, about a lot of comics criticize the grind culture right now. Like that's a big discussion in the comedy community about like grind culture and hustling and getting out every day and doing the shit. That kind of reaffirmed my belief of like, cause she's getting paid to do this shit. And she says every show is worth losing a way out to. That's what I thought. That was what I was thinking. You know, like a rep is a rep. That's all that matters. You're putting reps in. And I think that's the best shit that I ever learned is just like, it's just all about reps. You know, the shit is not like riding a bike. And it's also not like being a fucking musician. Musicians can walk into a practice room and practice for 3 hours.
Yeah, by themselves. No crowd.
We get our 10,000 hours 5 minutes at a time. You know, like it's fucking worth weaseling your way on to any show. And that was kind of reaffirmed to me recently because with all the discussion about like, oh, you don't have to be out every night killing yourself. I'm like, well, that's, sounds like some elitist opinion from someone who gets paid to do this shit, you know? I'm not getting paid to do this shit. I got a fucking bullshit-ass day job on top of this that I'm trying to fucking do that and this annoying shit at night, you know? Like, the shit at night is what I like, but it's like burning the candle at both ends does take a toll, and I know it's not the healthiest thing ever, but also, like, you gotta be hungry for this shit. Like, you gotta really, 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 really want it. So I think every show is worth doing. That's the point. If I could go back in time and slap myself for being like, what's the point of a mic if it's only comic? That's the kid I want to slap. That's every show is. Yeah, that's the fucking point. It's a rep, all about the rep. I'm not saying go out and fucking do cocaine just so you can do 5 open mics a night. You know, I'm not saying that. All right. Got to find some fucking balance.
Grind with cocaine.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
You gotta words of wisdom.
Yeah.
Do cocaine.
Same Candace experience.
Yeah. Right. Open mic and cocaine don't mix. There we go. That's what
don't cane. Yeah.
Don't cane.
Hey, real quick. I just want to ask you, you said that there's like some controversy about grind culture. Like what's going on with that?
Not really. I just feel like it's a topic of discussion I've seen a lot more recently than I ever have, at least in my time in the city. I'm completely aware that Facebook is a fucking echo chamber of everybody that agrees with me. You know what I mean? So like, y'all might be getting a different echo chamber, and maybe this is just some New York City bullshit that isn't a problem anywhere else. But it's like, mostly because like I said, you can get up 7 times in a night if you really wanted to here. So I think it came from some article. Some article was published in Vulture or some shit like that. Whatever comics read. I'm like, I have a fucking labor job. I don't read the fucking internet all day. So I don't know what people are talking about half the time. One of those articles that just gets passed around all over the fucking place on Facebook and Instagram and shit. Basically saying that like, you know, grind culture was killing me. And then I went to a therapist and I took a week off and now I'm happier and my comedy's better and blah, blah, blah. Like that was basically the gist of whatever the fuck was getting passed around. I was like, you're good for that fucking guy. You know, like, I don't give a shit about what that guy's doing. Like, I don't know that guy.
Like, sounded like some toxic masculinity kind of patriarchy stuff. Yeah.
It's a uniquely New York City thing where, cause this is the only fucking place you really can burn yourself out quickly doing that. I came up in a scene where there was one thing to do a night and all the comics stayed all night because there was nothing else to do. No one's getting burnt out doing that. You know, like that's not bad up here, I guess it became, like you said, kind of a toxic masculinity thing of like, oh, well, then you're not taking into account your mental health. And I'm like, who the fuck under 30 is.
Just when did mental health like make anybody funny anyway? Right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yo. Exactly. I always, man, I bitch about that a lot. Anytime I'm on the road, about like every New York comic has a bit about their therapist, and I fucking hate it, yo. Like, to me, I'm like, that shit hackier than humping the stool, bro. I'd rather see you hump the fucking stool than talk about whatever you talked about in therapy. There's a fucking reason you're in therapy talking about it there than here. It's not that I don't believe in therapy. I think it's good for you and shit like that. But I'm like, it's some fucking, anytime I've done road shit, I'm like, it is some coastal elite shit. People don't know what the fuck you're talking about if you try to take that anywhere else, you know? Like, especially New York comics or any scene where there's a coastline, you know? It is some fucking elitist shit where I'm like, you can't be talking about your fucking therapist and the A-train when you're doing shows in the middle of the country. You got to fucking talk about something interesting, you know? Like something different, like that shit. It doesn't travel.
Subway jokes in Florida.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I get sick of hearing it. I get absolutely sick of hearing it sometimes. And I always say it's because I'm bitter, because I say I have Medicaid, which is the dollar menu of health insurance. And so my joke on stage to justify my hatred of therapy is I say, if I go to Medicaid and type in therapist and network, it just pops up like, drink with your boys, all right? That's the best you're going to get with Medicaid. I don't remember what got me started on this tirade about therapy, but
we'll wrap it up and we can keep talking if we want. But
sure,
Steven, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you tonight. It's been such a fun time.
Absolutely. Had a blast.
Yeah, man. A lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun. I appreciate you guys having me, man.
No problem at all.
Yeah. Enjoyed hearing you talk about your experiences and everything.
Yeah, man. I appreciate y'all's questions. Y'all had great questions. Yo, you guys said,
thank you.
Had them all ready to go and like really thoughtful questions.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, no, we really appreciate it. Where can our listeners find more of you, your work and all that?
Yes. I'm on social media, basically under the name Steven with a PH and then Mick Longhair. That should be all you fucking need. I'm the only one. All right. So Steven with a PH, Mick Longhair. And my last name is Bowles. That's B-O-L-L-E-S. If you just search Mick Longhair comedian, all my shit is there. My Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, all that good stuff is there. And that's why I keep the McLong hair. I said I added it about 10 years ago when I had a few YouTube tapes online. I Googled Stephen Bowles and it was like a dead senator from the 1800s. And I was like, I got YouTube videos. Why does this fucking guy have more search engine power than I do? So I can't change my name. So I just added McLong hair in the middle. So that's all you got to remember is McLong hair. Yeah. You'll find all my shit online under McLong hair.
You still do a lot of hair material?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I didn't even whip it out for the podcast yet, but it's dumb long right now and I need to donate it pretty soon. But I always joke that I start my set by like whipping it out of a bun and then like throwing it around like an asshole a bunch of times and shit. Just whip my hair back and forth on stage. Although I will say it does have a lot of practical uses. Gets people off their phone, you know, makes them go, what the fuck is on stage right now? And gets people off their phones. So I keep it in my set.
That's awesome. Yeah, we really enjoy talking to you tonight, man. It's been so much fun.
Absolutely, man. Same to you too, man. I appreciate you guys.
Yeah, man.
Nah, he's a really great guy. And all.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Out tonight. Yeah,
it was cool.
The interesting thing, we haven't really talked to a lot of people in comedy that are like the host of shows. And so hearing that perspective is interesting because it's kind of a different dynamic. And just like he said, like the crowd work and all, like a lot of comedians don't necessarily do crowd work, but the host has to do it to kind of like lighten up the crowd, if you will.
Yeah. They're kind of like fluffers.
Yeah. And even like the roast battles, like again, we haven't talked to a lot of comedians that do roasting outside of like Sean Finnerty, I think. But that's a pretty unique scene as well. Like, the competitiveness of it and all that. That's pretty dope.
I love roast mm-hmm. battle. Like the writing is really cool because it seems to be like kind of a like more pure joke set. It's also really relatable, you know, to like, cause like when you're sitting around with your friends, like that's what you're trying to do to each other. You're trying to roast each other.
Yeah, of course. I mean,
I know. You guys, when we were growing up, you had a big, played a big part in building my inner dialogue at the, yeah, I mean, growing up in Florida, like that's like everybody does that to everybody. It's the best.
Well, it's not just Florida. I mean,
it's so much fun. It's hilarious.
Yeah, breaking balls is just way of life for some people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like I said, I like the kind of pureness of the writing. It's also, it's interesting too, because like a lot of the writing you're doing, it's like, it's for like a one-off thing, you know? So it's kind of,
it's a throwaway at all. Yeah.
I'm sure there's like themes and there's things that come up over and over again.
Yeah. Like even Steven said, like guy said, like, oh, this guy's drowning in cum kind of thing. And you kind of said, yeah, for anyone.
Yeah. Like I think anybody could drown in cum. Yeah.
And so that's also interesting because like a lot of those jokes are somewhat recyclable, but it's like you have to know when to use it and who to use it on and like how to deliver it. It's only like a line or two. It's only like a handful of words, but it's really the delivery and the way you say it and like when you're sticking it.
I love that like very little is off limits too. So it's kind of a pure place to be with.
That was the other thing. Like when he was saying they would message each other, like, "Hey, what's off limits?" I'm like, "Oh, I didn't realize they had that."
That seems like a good way to like get some darkness to make a joke out of.
Yeah, I'm gonna light this fucker up. Like, your mom's dead.
I feel like if we ever roasted, if you or Kyle or and me were ever in a roast, we'd do that. We already know everything about each other, though.
Yeah, I mean, like everything I would roast you about is like, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's some stuff I wouldn't be able to say that's off limits.
I don't care.
I'll roast you right now. I don't fucking care.
Yeah, try it. Try it out. Try
where our Patreons at.
Fuck that. Like, I'm not even really interested in.
Would you do a roast? I know we've been saying this literally for absolutely for forever.
Well,
now.
No, like a roast battle. I would definitely do a roast battle.
You do a roast battle? You want to prepare for, like? I think you said what was it? Five and rebuttals.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, like, I'd like to actually do some comedy first. Yeah, I'm gonna get up soon.
I feel like you've been saying that forever as well, but I'm glad it's finally.
I've been to one open mic.
You didn't go up though, right?
I didn't go. I've been writing though, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
How's it coming?
It's okay. There's some things I think might be funny.
How's it shaving down 20 minutes of dolphin rape into a 3-minute set?
I've retired my dolphin rape material. It's hacky at this point.
You should do a bit about you writing dolphin rape material for like a bit.
Yeah, that's a funny. I think that'd be just a funny bit if I ever get funny. You know, it's my first joke was about dolphin rape. It doesn't make any sense. I think an issue I have sometimes I find things that are kind of peculiar, interesting, and like either other people don't understand what I'm saying, or they don't, or it's just not as interesting to them. That's something that I'll have to get over. Thank you all for listening. If you would like to support the WWSD podcast, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/WWSD_podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe on our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
I don't have any, I can't just do, you know, me and my boys just sitting in a room talking about bullshit. Like, I've done that. And I've sorted through the 5 hours of footage after doing that. Like, y'all have good pointed questions that I like. We'll be rambling about like weed and squirrels for no fucking reason for 2 hours. You're like, I don't even know why we got on this topic. This makes no sense to no one but us.
Oh, we're very familiar with that track path. So it took a while to get to the point where we're at now. So it's funny to see that progression.